Oké, dat gaat. Het is vandaag de Gunditja Mardana. The cleansing of the Gunditja temple. That's what we're talking about, because we couldn't finish it this morning. Jai, jai. Huh?
We need a mic?
Either, you decide. You're the
technician. Yeah, no voice.
Jai, jai, si chitanya, jai, nityananda.
Jai, jai, si chitanya, jai, nityananda.
Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
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 Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
So today is the day that we are remembering when Lord Chaitanya, 500 years ago, at the time of Rath Yatra, in preparation of the Rath Yatra, they were taking the deities of Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra on every year on the chariots to the other side of Puri, to the temple of Gunditja. And in that temple of Gunditja, then the deities stay for 1 week and then they go back. There's another Rath Yatra after 1 week, and they go back to the Jagannath temple. So this Gunditja temple then, Lord Chaitanya was every year before Rath Yatra, he was cleaning that temple. And there is a chapter in the Chaitanya Charitamrita dedicated to that. So today is then the day that they're cleansing the temple. In some temples in ISKCON, they're also cleaning the temple that day, like anything, maha cleanup, and everyone is cleaning.
And I did it today.
You did it today, yeah? Very good, huh? Yeah. So, like that, here also they did. It's very clean now. And then we are, there's a chapter which describes the story. So I'll very shortly repeat the story for those who. Basically, Lord Chaitanya went with his associates to that temple, and they all assembled there. And the king had given his personal attendant. So that man was arranging everything, all the brooms and all the cleaning materials. And then Lord Chaitanya divided up the devotees in groups, and they were all meant to sweep. And he said there was a competition, whoever could do the most. So everybody together was sweeping, and Lord Chaitanya was everywhere encouraging people. And if somebody wasn't doing very much, he would chastise also. Meanwhile, he was cleaning himself. And at the end, Lord Chaitanya alone had collected a bigger pile of dust than everybody else together. Yeah. So, not only that, Lord Chaitanya had the sweeping done twice. One time they were taking out all the gross things, and the second time they were taking out the more finer dust, like that. And then they brought pots with water from a nearby lake, known as Indrajumna Sarovar, which is still there today. And they were bringing hundreds of pots with water, and they were running up and down. And then they were throwing this water all over the temple and washing it from top to bottom. And while they were running, and while they were doing all these things, they were only saying Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And everyone understood what others meant. So if someone said, can I have a broom? You just say Krishna, Krishna. And everyone understood he wants a broom. We need more water, Krishna, Krishna. So the only word for communication was Krishna, and somehow or other everyone understood each other. So it was clear that Lord Chaitanya had manifested some special mercy in the whole thing, that there was a transcendental thing, of course, that suddenly everyone spoke the Krishna language and understood each other. So that was quite extraordinary about the whole pastime. Then there is a famous purport, which is from the commentary of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, known as Anubhasya. We have two major commentaries, Amrita Varvaha Bhasya from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and we have the Anubhasya from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And actually, in the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada has put a lot of energy in developing the purports. He has taken there from the Acharyas, but he's added a lot of comments of his own in the CC less, and in many cases he has given things straight from the commentary from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. So a lot of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is speaking through the pages of the CC, actually, very, very much. And this particular purport is very famous. It is Madhya 1235. And in that famous purport, he is comparing the cleansing of the temple to the inner cleansing of the heart. We started speaking about that this morning. And obviously, the gross sweeping and the finer sweeping. The gross sweeping means we first of all give up our gross sinful activities. And then, second of all, the finer sweeping, then after we encounter so many impurities in ourselves. Then we realize, I'm proud, I'm envious, I'm suffering from anger, undue anger, I'm afflicted by lust, I'm afflicted by all these bad qualities, actually. We realize it. And we realize that we have to do some work. We realize that it's not just over yet. Now I have externally made all the adjustments in my life, but that's only the beginning, actually, because I'm meeting myself and I'm realizing that although externally I have taken all the steps to be a devotee, internally I'm not a devotee at all. Okay, so therefore, there is cleansing on two levels, the gross and the finer cleansing. See, the gross in Krishna consciousness is more easy, because in the gross we are accepting things like two principles, three principles, four principles. You can measure it. It's four rounds, eight rounds, 12 rounds, 16 rounds. It's really clear whether you're doing it or not. So at that stage, advancement is very clear. It's very measurable. It's very transparent. But when it comes to developing Vaishnav qualities, there are 26 Vaishnav qualities listed, and I'm not capable of rattling off lists of 26 from memory. So sorry about that. But for example, a Vaishnava is mild in his dealings. And a Vaishnava is poetic. A Vaishnava has forgiveness. Some qualities like that. Well, if we are looking up the 26 qualities of a devotee, then, and we look at ourselves and hold those 26 qualities up as a mirror to ourselves, then, well, that looks pretty poor. Right? What to do? So, and that is much more difficult. Much more difficult to measure. Am I humble or not? Difficult. You try to be humble, and then you try even more. Now, am I humble? Maybe still not humble. It has to do with introspection. Yesterday, I saw somewhere in passing a sign advertising a psychology magazine. And it showed some lady on the cover, and it said, "What do I really want?" Right? I don't know where I saw it. You also saw it, maybe, because you're nodding. Anyway, so we must have seen it on the way. But anyway, I saw it somewhere on the way. And I thought, what do I really want? Yes, I thought that's what psychology is all about. If you start to go into introspection, what do I really want? Who am I really? What qualities do I really have? It gets very ethereal and mental and difficult to figure it out. And who am I? You know, am I this? Am I that? You know, so it's more difficult to measure. Not so easy. Not so clear. So phase two, the second sweeping, is more complex. Not like so easy to measure as the first sweeping. So that's like. So we're going to work trying to purify our heart, and we understand that the main process for purifying our heart is devotional service. Just serve Krishna. By sweeping the floor in this temple, one cleanses the heart. By cutting potatoes for Krishna, right, we are just we're getting purified like anything. So devotional service purifies. That's the main thing. And then the other aspect is, in support of this devotional service, we make a conscious endeavor to help it. I gave this morning already a talk about this and used the example about if you're taking a medicine, then you still have to live a healthy lifestyle. I mean, if you take a medicine, but at the same time you live like totally unhealthy, then you will not get so much benefit from your medicine. You know? To really get the benefit, you have to also adjust your lifestyle. In the same way, to really get the benefit from the medicine of devotional service, we also have to adjust our lifestyle gradually, and therefore make a conscious endeavor to change. Krishna consciousness is about changing. It is about us changing. It's very difficult to change because in some ways we don't change. But we don't have to change the one we are, but we have to change our orientation. Our orientation is wrong. As it is said, this movement, this Bhagavatam, is bringing about a revolution in the misguided life of a misdirected civilization. That's what it says in Bhagavatam, in the fifth chapter, the first canto. So we ourselves are like that. Wrong orientation. All our qualities have been going in the wrong direction. Our natural appreciation for things went into the wrong direction. Now we have to all pull it back and move it towards Krishna. Now, that's not so easy because we are conditioned. We are just used to it. And the mind says, yes, but, you know, wait a minute, I want to be natural also. Yes, but it is so difficult to separate nature and the layers of long-term behavior on top of our nature. And these two, they grow together. And it's very difficult to separate them. So this is conditioning. Is it our nature, or is it just a habit of so many, many years? Somewhere I read, you know, nowadays, in this information age, you get so much information thrown at you all the time from everywhere. So here's again some psychologist who said that if you do something for 1 month, then it is a habit. You also read it somewhere? He stole it from somewhere. No, he has read it, same thing I read. Yeah. Just to see. I also stole it from somewhere, but I don't really know where it is. But anyway, there's some psychologist who said that. Yeah. And so whether that is true, that's debatable, of course, you know. But it is something we can think about. If you've done something for years, if you've done something for lives, then it's just become, then you're convinced it's me, this is my nature. You've done it for three lives. It's just so much covered our true nature that it's like we're convinced this is me. But it's not at all ourselves. Not at all. So a part of the process of Krishna consciousness is to dismantle the false ego. To consciously dismantle our false ego. That element is there. And this is maybe the point where we have reached after this morning's discussion, and everything I saw I gave up to this point was sort of a recap, in other words, of what we already did this morning. A repeat. Recap means recapitulation. Now I'm carrying on. I'm finishing reading the purport of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, which goes for 5 pages. So substantial, long purport. That's why we didn't finish it this morning. And kept the best for last, as it's supposed to be, isn't it? Why the best for last? Why can't the best be first? No, the best is for last because, you know, modern people say, why the best for last? Let's just have the best and let's just forget the rest. But that is not the way it works, because the way it works is that each thing, each experience is an experience in itself, but at the same time a preparation for a higher experience. In the same way, each service that we do in devotional service stands in itself, but it's also the preparation for the next service, the greater service. This is how it works. Each time. And then you realize, when you get to the greater service, you realize, it actually was only preparation. They look back and think, gosh, it was only preparation. I thought I was in the middle of it. And now I realize, it was actually all preparation for where I am now. And, so, and it's each time like that. Then you go on to the next. And you thought you were right in the middle of it, but it was all preparation for where you are now. Just see. This is how it is. Therefore, the best is for the last. Yeah. So, I'll start reading now. But the contamination is so strong that it may later develop into misunderstanding, described as kutinati, fault-finding. So, kutinati, I said this morning, is not only fault-finding, it is also business mentality and pretending. These three things are covered under kutinati. So, pretending and business mentality are going closely together. Because when you are having a business mentality, it means that you are fruitive, you're looking for profit everywhere. So, business mentality doesn't just mean you want to make money, but it looks, you're basically someone who's always calculating his own advantage, constantly. And so it becomes a second nature to calculate. And therefore, you must present yourself strategically as favorable as possible to get the best result. So you become manipulative. And then the result is duplicity begins to arise. And you begin to gradually see the same in others. You see that you're not the only one who's doing it. Others are doing it too. And you begin to see others through that way. And therefore you begin to see conspiracy where it's not even there. And in that way, fault finding also comes from kutinati. So it's very interesting how these three are actually related. How there's a certain dynamics that is happening there. And how simply by being so attached to the results of activities and trying to enjoy them and gain and profit and always calculating our advantage, how much you get caught up and how difficult it then will be to just be a devotee. Therefore it is said that a devotee has the quality of arjavam, simplicity. And it said this simplicity, arjavam, this quality, is simultaneously also relating to honesty. When you approach such a devotee, he has no secret. He has nothing to hide. Because he is not sinful. When you are sinful, you have something to hide. You have to hide things. You have to lie. You have to keep up a facade. Yeah. It's a huge entanglement. We know, because we have all been entangled like that. And therefore, to some extent, the tendency to uphold a facade is still there in us. But to actually come to the point of becoming simple, no more facade. Therefore, in the Bible, it says you have to be like a child, right? New Testament says you have to be like a child. Children, they just don't have a facade like that. They just, you know, that's the nice thing about a child. No facade. Basically, of course, a little bit, it's already beginning to shape, and they can be more tricky than you think. But still, there is a lot of openness and innocence, no facade. And that's so attractive about children, that they're just so totally open and so honest. That sort of, just as they feel it, yeah, they blurt it out. So pretense is a big problem in a devotee's life, duplicity. So we must try. We cannot just automatically become so open and so easy, because part of our reservation also is due to our environment. We come from a world where love and trust are big words, and it's not so easy to implement them. And sometimes you say, love, yes, but trust. In this age, so many people cannot be trusted. They will misuse whatever you tell them, whatever they, or they'll exploit you or whatever. I mean, to trust, it's very difficult to trust in this age. Very hard. Therefore, very hard to open up. So we open up layer by layer. We have many layers, and you know, we share layers. Or you can compare it to a house which has rooms on the outside and then gradually rooms towards the inside. Yes, in the outside rooms of the house, we are receiving people and they see this side of the house. A friend, we take a little deeper into the house, but then the innermost private chambers, nobody enters. So that's the situation of the heart, the innermost private chambers of the heart. Therefore it is said, Sada Hridaye Kandarevu Sachinandana, that Sachinandan, or Lord Chaitanya, must be in the innermost chambers of our heart. So in the private chambers of the heart, he must be there also. So we must there also surrender. We cannot therefore keep anything, a hidden agenda. We cannot keep any hidden desire there in the last room. Everything, yes, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. It's all Krishna. And then you go a deeper level privately, it's still Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And you go still one room deeper, one level deeper, it's Krishna. But then in the final chamber, it's not Krishna. Yes. Then we have a problem. Then there's still some duplicity in us. Yes. Then there's still some contamination. Then the heart is not pure, and we spoke about that this morning. The throne, one is to enthrone Krishna in the heart. Question came, what is the difference between the Supersoul and enthroning Krishna in the heart? The Supersoul is already there. Supersoul is Krishna, is the witness, is Upadrasta Anumanta, as the overseer, Upadrasta, and as the Anumanta, the witness. That's what he's doing, and he's advising us in this way, from no, don't go here, please, this is wrong, don't do this, it is wrong.
somehow or other I have this feeling that it's wrong if I do this. I don't know why, but I have this intuitive feeling that maybe I shouldn't do this.
The super soul is with us, right, in this way. But it's totally different to enthrone Krishna in the heart. To enthrone Krishna in the heart means it's an altar, to make an altar in our heart and place Krishna on there and worship him with our whole heart. Then everything has to go. So, okay, enough about kutinati. Pratistha is the desire for prophet distinction and adoration, the desire for recognition. We came in this material world because we were in competition with Krishna to be the object of everyone's adoration. So this tendency is very, very deep, very fundamental. It's at the very roots of our being in the material world. It's why we are here. Therefore, it is said the desire to be God is the last snare of Maya. It is very, very deep. So it's not so easy to get over Pratistha. And it goes like that. Even in the Hare Krishna movement, it can be like, upward mobility. There can be a tendency for upward mobility. Upward mobility is referring to getting more and more positions. The positions can be managerial, and you can make a career there. Or the positions can be spiritual. I mean, try guru and sannyasi. That's not bad. People bowing down and washing their feet and stringing garlands and ironing cloth till deep in the night, cooking special preparations. Was it all right? You could make a few adjustments that would really agree better with my liver, you see. Oh yes, thank you. One can live like that. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur speaks about the monster. He wrote an essay. Here he is, the brute, the beast. He is sitting on a throne surrounded by people who are glorifying him. See him in his arrogance, it's swelling in his pride. He writes in that mood, about the guru. And then he continues that, and the article continues to write that still, it must be done. It must be done. Because the guru, he is there for people to practice. Basically, conditioned souls in this world, they haven't served for a long time. So they have to practice on somebody. So they practice on the guru until they finally get it down. And then, and then they get suitable at the end of this life to go back to God and serve Krishna directly. Of course, they already get a chance on the altar as they are getting more advanced. But they're practicing on the guru. So, it has its good sides and its bad sides, this was unedible. They're practicing, they're practicing. This is undrinkable. So sometimes this bed is unsleepable. It's not. I do remember that Rida and Andamaraj sometimes rebelled against guruship, and that he was staying in a house, and Radhanath visited him, and Radhanath said, "No servants, okay? We're not going to have any servants. We're going to do our own washing and our own cooking and everything." What ecstasy. So that element is there. Anyway, it's interesting that this is really what the guru-disciple relationship is about. We are practicing here on the guru how to serve Krishna. And he has to act as the representative of Krishna. Then it can be tough. Some people tend to turn the guru into a deity, a living deity. They deity-fy him. And it's like, it can be really intense to be a deity when you're not a deity. I know. It's like, Indians really like it, Like, deity, and everything becomes worship. Everything. We are worshipping Swamiji. So it's really intense. It can so easily go to the ego. So somehow or other, one can only take a position of superiority over others, of being worshipped, if one makes a sacrifice, and one must make a greater sacrifice than the others. Otherwise it's not gonna work out. Only if one really makes a sacrifice is one protected from this pratistha. Otherwise, it will capture us. But if one makes a sacrifice, all right, then it is possible to even accept worship from others. But one has to, of course. It's Krishna. It's actually Krishna. We see in Prabhupada, he always did. Actually, it's Krishna. It's about Krishna, not about me. It's Krishna. It's Krishna. While I'm sitting on this chair with this huge, big backside, which I hope one day they will screw it off and they will screw another one on, that is just a sort of like half round, because this is from the pre-Guru reform days. This thing has revived. This is from pre-87, this thing.
I asked somebody to adjust it.
It's an easy thing. You screw it off and you make fucking rod, and it's a half round thing in the back. We no longer have these monster things, but alright, I have to sit on it. It's not even comfortable, I'll tell you that. Your cushion is too strong. I blew it. Sorry about that. Forgive me for my last comment. That was a mistake. That's okay.
It was the hardest one you could possibly find.
No, it's a good cushion. It's a good cushion. It's still a little soft, but okay. I guess cushions by nature are soft. So, back to... Pratistha. So we must be careful that we make a sacrifice for Krishna, for spreading Krishna consciousness. Then if we take some respect, yes, it's only to bring others to Krishna. We must follow. We must follow. If we follow spiritual standards, yes, then we can accept a position of as a teacher. But first, we must really do something more than just follow. We have to be very deep. Otherwise, how can one possibly accept the position of guru? So a guru must be careful in what he accepts, very careful. And not only a guru, because everyone becomes a teacher, everyone becomes senior somewhere. Everyone has his superiors, his equals, and his juniors. So everyone is a teacher somewhere. And of course, in the beginning, you're new, and it's easy to be humble because, it's like everyone is, you're in the bottom position. I'm servant, servant, servant. But as you're coming up and start to point people this way, please, that way, please. This is how we do it. Prabhu, this is not actually the proper standard. Excuse me, but you don't like. There are many traps on the way, and they're subtle and hard to catch. But it's not easy. Jiva himsa, envy of other living entities. Envy is when it hurts us when someone else gets glory. And envy is when we feel pleasure when that same person is being pulled down by circumstances. So it's nasty envy. I don't know how much I want to get into envy now. I do have a very envious story, but I don't know if I should tell it, unless someone is getting very curious.
And very curious.
But it's envious. It's really envious. Okay, yeah, you sure you can take it?
Sure you can give it?
I can give it, but can you take it?
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem. Okay. It's envious. Well, the story is about a genie in a bottle. Genies come in bottles, as we know, or spirits in a bottle, and someone saw this entity in a bottle and was intrigued. Let me out, I will give you what you desire. Okay. Master, how can I serve you? Master, I will give you whatever you desire, but your neighbor will get double. That's all right, that's okay. I don't mind. He can have it. This is okay, you know, like, I mean, sure, he can have, but I will, you know, yeah, let's go for it. So let's have a palace to begin with. May as well. All right. Wow, a whopper of a palace. Really nice. Everything on there: towers, balconies, verandas, you name it. But next door, God, a palace twice as big. Whew. Well, he's really got a nice place there. Anyway. But this is also really, really good. Boy, I'm enjoying like anything. But after a while, the problem with the palace of the neighbors was that at times it was blocking the sun, if you know what I mean, right? The pleasant morning sun, especially, which on the southern balcony, right, which right is supposed to shine on the southern balcony exactly where you want to sit, just there. This tower on the palace next door was blocking the sun on my southern balcony. It just got absolutely too much. It just started to eat my heart, if you know what I'm talking about. And at one point, I just... Yes, monster. Genie, this palace next door, it has been sort of a disturbance. I think we need a few stories on top of what we already have, you know. Why don't you make my palace 4 times as high? No problem, master. Next door, 8 times as high. God. From that day on, our friend was developing a depression. He thought about it really, really deep. Then one day, he had the answer. Genie, my old friend, how nice to see you. I have an idea. I want that you take one of my eyes. From that day, he was very happy. Yeah. I told you it's an envious story. Well, anyway, so that's one level of envy. Another level of envy is where we cannot allow others to exist. That's also envy. That we don't give others any room to be. without given room to be. No, you cannot exist in this street there. Sorry, you are not fitting there. You are you're too different, so you don't fit, so out. Yeah, we don't want you here. You know. It's another way of envy, not allowing people to exist. Yes. Sometimes, because they don't confirm what we are doing, they don't confirm what we believe in. I spoke about this in Cologne somewhere, about how they tell the Hare Krishnas also like that. They tell you, how many times they tell you, go get a job. And have they told you, Gangadhar? In your...
No.
Never told you. You look like you have a job. But I look like I don't have a job. And absolutely. And they always so many times told me, go get a job. When I was at Sankirtan, they told me, go get a job. When I was standing books on the street, they would tell me, go get a job. Yeah. Sometimes they would tell me, go get married. I was. I mean, no. But anyway, because I was standing there like a symbol representing, right, a protest against their way of life. I wasn't happy with their way of life. And that forced them to question the whole thing. Therefore, my very existence was a thorn in their sight. Because by my very existence, they were forced to think about their life, and that possibly it wasn't all as rosy as everybody is telling each other. Therefore, these Hare Krishnas are just a pain. One can think like that. So there's another way of how envy is manifest. I've got to go a little quicker now. I'll never finish this purport. Nisida achar, accepting things forbidden in the Shastra. So this is something that we all struggle with, because Shastra came in very late in our life. So we have a problem with that. When you come from a Vedic culture and you're drilled as a kid, the scripture, the Shastra, the Shastra, the Shastra, the Veda, the Veda, the Veda, it's sort of a second habit. And we see that Indians do rebel, you know. But they are like, it's like puberty, you know. It's so ingrained in them, and then they rebel. But when they become devotees again, they slot in very easy in the whole Vedic rules and so on. Because they got it all, actually. But we didn't get it all. And therefore, Nisida Achar, you know, behavior against the scripture, well, what can you do? You know, I am what I am. So we have this I am what I am philosophy. And what can I do? You know, I want to change, but can I? I am what I am. This is very deep in us. And therefore we struggle with this I am where I am, I want to change, but can I for a long time? This is really an obstacle in our lives, where we are facing that and struggling in our spiritual life to at one point say, no, these are just layers that are lying on top of my true personality. I am not that. Yes, someone wrote me a letter, you know, after having been a devotee, initiated and everything for a long time, I am gay. So, what will I say to that? What I say to that is, no, you're not. You're not that. You just have become attracted to that. You're attracted to being gay. You are not gay. You are attracted to it. And somehow or other in this life, due to whatever circumstances, maybe even in last life you were attracted to it, you became attracted to it. But it's not you. It's a layer that's lying on top of your real personality. Your real personality is something totally different. It's not that at all. It's a layer that lies on top. But now, because you're attracted, you start to identify with it. You say, I am that. And by saying, I am that, you make it something that is unbendable, unbreakable, unchangeable. It's become unchangeable because I am that. Right? Therefore, we say again and again, we're not the body, we're not the body, we're not the body. So then, if you're not the body, then you have nothing to do with that also, because that is related to the body. So that's automatically then something. Now we are in this body because we became attracted to certain activities, certain karma that belongs with this body. Karma da devani trena, and we were placed in a particular body where we get the opportunity to express that what we became attached to. But if you look at it like, okay, I am not that, but I have developed attraction to it and I've developed attachment to this. Alright, that's a totally different thing. Now, I gave this one example because I got a letter like that, you know, not so long ago from somebody that I know and this, that, and it's alright. And I had to write a reply to it, which I wrote in this last week, you know, so it's still somewhere. That's why I use this example, not because I want to bash somebody or something or single something out, but it's just... I mean, you can also be attached to so many other things. I'm attracted. Yes. But the point is, we are attracted to something. It's not us. It's not us. No. Anything to the material, we are attracted. It's not us. I am not like this. You know. No. I am a musician. You know. I'm a guitar player. That was me. You know. Today. Strange enough, the son of my former wife, he had a son way before marriage, somehow or other, when she was younger, you know, and this that happened, and whatever. And he came here. He knows about Krishna consciousness. He never grew up with her because she was too young and was adopted. So it was a little bit of one of those social unhappy stories, but he came today, and then he brought a whole bunch of photos from the past that he had found about my former wife and me and myself before we were devotees. Yeah, so you know there they were. Yeah. I showed a few to Bhagavati. She saw it. My hair was longer than I remembered it. It was longer than I remembered it. You know, actually, everyone had a lot of hair, I must say. You know, they had more hair than I remembered them. There was one guy on the photos named Hank, and he had curly hair. It was a lot, actually. More than I remembered him like that. We were indeed a hairy lot, looking back at it. There I was, playing my guitar. And it was just so much part of me at one point, that instrument, that it was unthinkable that I would ever not play guitar. And I remembered a song from James Taylor. I never played it, but he's saying, if my guitar can't go to heaven, then I don't think I want to go. Right? So, and I thought, like, yeah, I agree. That's, and now, you know, it all became, more insignificant. I still like the instrument more than a harmonium, I must admit. Strings are better than keyboards for me. But who cares about these things? It's so... Now I see it all so much more in a broader perspective. I got another letter from another disciple who is a doctor. And this disciple is only since short time a doctor and has to work in the SLA. She was there at my Vyasa Puja, so some of you have met her. But she has to work 2 years as an intern, junior doctor in a South African hospital. That's heavy. It's not like a Dutch hospital, that's a South African one, you know, the South African government hospital. Heavy duty. First of all, the conditions may not, in government hospitals, are not exactly like what it's here. And second of all, the diseases that are around in Africa are also more intense than the ones that are here and this, that. And then she's like taking care of these babies, and then they always die, of course, many of them, you know. And that's, of course, quite depressing, you know, for a young lady just to bring babies in the world who then die after a few hours and sort of struggling and fighting to try and keep the life, and boom, dead. So she's living with death, right, just all the time, non-stop, and just seeing it in, especially with babies, sort of seeing it happening to innocent creatures and innocent people. So it's heavy. And then on top of it, she just told me now only that she caught tuberculosis in the hospital and has to take the medicine. Yeah, it's like it's all rampant all over the place there. So lots of fun. So heavy duty, right? And I know that she has a lot to digest from that hospital. Sometimes we talk about it and it's all like quite intense. And then, yeah, so I had to sort of got one of these letters, you know, about how intense it all was and death everywhere, and said, oh, well, how do we respond to this, right? Well, in this case, that, yes, she's a little young to have the shells removed from her eyes. But the fact of the matter is, this is the domain of death. It's everywhere. Have you seen the catacombs? Skulls stacked on top of each other, one next to the other. Death, have you seen like millions of insects in the light at night, and in the morning they're lying there all dead? You can see in India, you see. Death, 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 death. There are no survivors. And, well, you know, from a devotional point of view, completely insignificant. But in a hospital and in the world, this is the crucial moment. Right? For this we stop the traffic. Now, this is the time. This is the most important time. Life and death. This is it. The intense moment. Attention. It's heavy, yes. And for us, and then that's not the essence. The crucial point. What is the crucial point? The crucial point is where the connection with Krishna is made. And when the doctor chants Hare Krishna, when the kids come out of the womb, that's pretty good. Can you imagine? You come in the world, the doctor chants Hare Krishna. And when the doctor carries a dying baby and on the way is chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, then say, well, that was a good life. It was only 2 hours. That was a life of only 2 hours, but probably it was better than the life before that, which lasted maybe 97. Right? Yes, maybe this baby 1 year ago was an old man or an old lady, so entangled in so many things. Now came back as a baby to get a 2 hour birth, a 2 hour life. But in that life, the doctor was chanting Hare Krishna. Good life. Short, but powerful. Yeah. Short, but effective. So when we look at things from spiritual perspectives, you see the whole focus, the whole essence is somewhere else. Yeah. But the whole world is like this, a matter of life and death. That's it, you know. It's like, woo, now it gets serious, now it gets real. Of course, I know that we are conditioned and that we may also still be a little bit in that conditioning of life and death. But then Prabhupada saw it completely different. Yes, it's being asleep for 7 months. Right. And that's all it is. Good, get a good rest. That's about it. Right. Being unconscious for 7 months. That's all it is. Not a big deal. Right. And that's what we see in the scriptures, and that's how we eventually have to see it. Okay, I wrote this letter because I thought about this thing in the past, and I thought about what it's really like and what is really the essence, and I try to live that. It's about the connection with Krishna, whatever that is. That's the focus. That's the meditation. And death and birth and all this disease and all these things. Oh, they come and go and you deal with it. And but I'm really afraid of the pain at the time of death. Yes, I would also be if I didn't have Krishna to protect me. Krishna will surely make arrangements that I'll get through it. And I know that it will be there, and I know that will be the purification that I require before I'm really eligible to go to a better destination. So even that, you know, I know Krishna will pull me through it somehow. So there's no need to worry about that either. It's all good. Okay. So that's all good. So in the light of all that, how can we worry so much about the temporary things? And I like yellow and you like blue and someone else likes green, and who cares? Yellow, blue and green. Yeah. When Krishna wears yellow, it looks great. When Krishna wears blue, it looks fantastic. When Krishna wears green, it looks good too. Yeah. Because all these colors are meant for Krishna only. As far as I'm concerned, Krishna's peacock feather is green, Krishna himself is blackish blue, and his dhoti is yellow, and it's all pretty far out. So to there is such a transcendental movement, so transcendental, so way beyond what is going on in the world, what people think in the world, how people see it in the world, that it's sometimes shocking. How transcendental it is, even shocking to ourselves. My God, are we transcendental? Yeah, amazingly transcendental. Well, time has been flying, and I will be flying tomorrow night, and I am... I don't want to make it so late, because then I get so tired. Like last night was too late, and this morning was I tired. And then I was driving around all day on Udava's bicycle. And it's like, I'm riding on my father's bicycle because he's a lot taller than me. I can't get my feet on the ground. I can barely get to the pedals. You know, it's sometimes I almost felt like I should put my leg under the bar, you know, and drive it like that. It's like it's tough. So I was exhausted from cycling. But it was very healthy. It was a great day for cycling. So I had to apply for a new driver's license, which is expired, and I'm not registered in Poland, and they were sending me from here to there and everywhere. So I had lots of fun. In short, I want to wind it up. But you can come up with a few questions. But don't ask questions about death, because that's a trivial thing. Go for something important, like Krishna praying or something. Yes?
I don't know, my question is a little bit about the death, but it's related to that. I have a question, because I just heard yesterday, King Kulashekhar, by paying obeisances to his guru, after paying obeisances to his guru, he touched his farted accidentally and the dust fell out, and Guru thought that he kind of cleaned himself, the Guru get very angry. So atonement for this kind of gesture in the Vedas was that he need to do 108 prostrate obeisances on the hot plate, no? Actually, like a copper plate with a fire under. So I kind of, and then it was like this different kind of like...
Atonement.
Yeah, why?
Karmic atonement. Yeah. Well, it was a different age, and therefore the offense was very serious, and maybe they had some heavy type of atonement. And sometimes there are these heavy atonements. Why? Because the envy, which can be the cause of an offense, is also burning so much that then it had to be counteracted by burning. Yeah. So the heat of his disrespect and his envy was equaling the heat on that copper plate. That's how you can understand why. However, this is karmakanda, and it's we discussed this morning, that's not good enough, because it may counteract the karmic reaction, but it does, the fruit of the karma will be minimized, but it doesn't take the root of the karma out of the heart. And thus one will again commit such similar offense. Therefore, this is all this karmakanda. It doesn't work completely, and you can now see that it is brutal sometimes. Thus, we don't want anything to do with it. It is therefore a session of the Vedas which we reject as kaitava dharma, as cheating religion, or as it is described in Bhagavad Gita, Traigunya Visaya Veda, Nistraigunya Bhavarjuna. There is a portion of the Vedas which is under the three modes of material nature. So that section of the Vedas is under the three modes. So we don't want to have anything to do with it. This is the session of the Vedas that we are not interested in. We are interested in the session of the Vedas that speaks about pure devotional service. And that can remove all inauspiciousness from the heart through a positive process. By, if there is a glass with a drop of ink in it, you just keep on adding water and eventually it will become clear. So, in this way, by adding the positive force of devotional service, eventually all impurity will disappear. Whew, how easy, how light, how pleasant, and how harsh, and how heavy can be this material part of the Vedas. We see in South India that there are people who are doing a particular type of austerity where they pull some sort of chariot-like thing with hooks in the flesh. This is in the mode of ignorance. This we reject it. Therefore, it is sometimes a problem when we say we are Hindus, because this is part of Hinduism. Therefore, we can certainly not ascribe to every aspect of Hinduism, because some things are totally in the mode of ignorance. Totally unacceptable. Hooks through the flesh. Horrible. We don't have anything to do with it. Hot plates of copper and obeisances on it. Forget it. This is karma kanda. We don't want to have anything to do with it. But the story is interesting. Thank you. The end has come. It's all over now. I have to go far away from here to Uddhava's house. Can't wait till finally the new temple will be open. This one, in one way headed with this one, I must admit. But the Lord is here. is there.
And cycling is good for your health. So, Krishna's arrangement. I just have to surrender. Thank you very much. Shield Prabhupada.
Thank you.